Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Occasionally in mathematics, a young student makes a breakthrough so profound that it leaves the expert stunned. This is what happened in 1982 when the Englishman Simon Donaldson began to publish his insights into four-dimensional manifolds, loosely speaking, four-dimensional spaces. He was only 25 years old, midway through his PhD. One of the things that made his discoveries especially remarkable was that they were prompted by concepts in modern physics, the so-called gauge theories. They'd been hugely successful in accounting for experiments on atoms and the nuclei at their cores. By studying the mathematical structures of these theories, Simon Donaldson was led to what his supervisor, Michael Atiyah, described to me as the most stunning discovery in mathematics in the last two decades of the 20th century. My name is Graham Farmlow, and I'm the author of The Universe Speaks in Numbers, which looks at how physics and mathematics are continually indebted to each other. Simon Donaldson is a prominent figure in this story, so I was delighted to have the opportunity to talk with him during a visit last November to the Simon Centre for Geometry and Physics at Stony Brook University on Long Island. Donaldson is a delightful interviewee, friendly, thoughtful, and exceedingly modest. Occasionally, he uses mathematical terms that are unfamiliar to most of us, but I'd recommend that you let them wash over you and that you focus on the big picture. You're about to hear a really first-rate mathematician reflect on his experience of working alongside and sometimes collaborating with physicists. It's a revealing listen. I began by asking Donaldson whether he was interested in mathematics when he was a boy.
Yes, from the time I was, I think, about 12 or so.
Really?
I took it up as a hobby outside school. Reading books and playing around with various projects of my own. Mm-hmm. Mostly came to nothing, no really concrete conclusion, but I was sort of working as a mathematician somehow at a young age.
I'm intrigued. You say you was it as a hobby as well as school, you mean? You were...
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I think I was given a book on calculus sort of a few years before we did it at school. And so I read that and I was...
Donaldson did his first degree in mathematics at Cambridge, where he acquired a passion for the subject, as he later told me. For his PhD, he moved to Oxford, where he worked with the great Michael Atiyah, who was in the process of morphing into a quasi-physicist, as he put it, having done much to illuminate the mathematics of gauge theories. Donaldson told me that he'd become interested in differential geometry, the branch of mathematics at the heart of Einstein's theory of gravity.
In choosing to go to Oxford, I wasn't... The link with physics was not a direct motivation. Yeah. I was really interested in differential geometry and manifolds, which was something that didn't really feature at all in the Cambridge course.
Really?
Well, only to a very small extent. Most of the courses I did in Cambridge were on functional analysis and things of that... algebraic topology, but more sort of abstract. So it was quite hard to learn anything about
When you say differential geometry there, again, if you'll forgive me coming as a physicist here, were you interested in its connection to Einstein's theory of gravity, or was that of no concern of yours? It was more abstract than that, perhaps.
Well, I was interested. That was, in fact, the only place to learn about differential geometry in the Cambridge course then was in a relativity course.
Ah.
So I learned about...
Oh, so you went to a physics course then?
Oh, yes. Ah. I did quite a lot of physics. I did quite a lot of the applied courses in...
Ah!
I mean, I didn't... mastered them in the same way. But I went to things on classical theory of fields.
I wondered, was Donaldson as confident in physics as he was in mathematics?
I was somewhat confident. It's hard to explain. I mean, in school, I studied physics A-level and things, and so I've had it one time I was even thinking of, back in school, I was even thinking of doing physics rather than mathematics.
I see.
I did a lot of applied courses of classical kind of mathematical physics, but what I missed was the problems that you were set would be more like calculate something,
yes,
rather than how do you find a way to prove. So that what you had to do, I found more trying to prove something was more congenial to me than how to calculate something.
But you could do it, you say. You could, if pressed, you could do
well,
that.
I could do it, if pressed, yes. If pressed, I could do it to some extent.
How did it feel to make an unarguably great discovery in mathematics so early in his research career? I was expecting Donaldson to play down his great achievement, and he duly obliged.
Yes, I mean, it was unexpected to me. The initial, kind of the first result, which started the subject, came completely as a byproduct of trying to do something else. And I was just studying these spaces of solutions to this instanton equation.
So we're talking about Yang-Mills theories, yes, field theories, applied to quantum field theory.
My project, PhD project, involves studying the solutions of these equations.
Yeah.
So I just in trying to understand how these spaces behaved, one just got this picture, and then one saw this tells us something about formula faults, but it wasn't... In fact, initially, I thought that what it told you about formula faults was some well-known thing.
you thought other people would have known it.
Yes, I thought this is just some theorem about formula faults.
Yeah.
I wasn't at all a specialist in formula faults, so I just thought maybe this was a neat way of proving some
had already been
well-known
established. Yeah.
thing.
Yeah,
I looked into it more. I had also a colleague. I shared an office then with Mike Hopkins, who subsequently became a very well-known algebraic topologist.
Mm.
So he played a big role in pointing out that something that I thought might be some well-known true thing was not, I mean, this was more the algebraic side, was not true. But after that, then to kind of get more information, then that was more about designing an approach to extract more information from these things.
Donaldson told me that he'd often been impressed by the insights into mathematics made by physicists, especially Edward Witten, who's made unexpected connections between mathematics and physics. Most famously, Witten discovered astonishing relationships between the mathematician's theory of knots and the physicist's theory of quantum fields. The mathematicians, too, were doing much to improve our understanding of gauge theories. Many of these advances enabled by progress in calculus, especially in solving what are known as differential equations, which relate not only different variable quantities, but also the rates at which they change.
One prerequisite for these developments is advances in nonlinear partial differential equations, so that one can actually, in many cases, prove things rigorously about these complicated equations, which would really be out of range of people 100 years ago. They might have, even if they'd thought of writing down these Yang-Mills equations, there wouldn't have been the underlying mathematical foundations to prove anything in a rigorous way about them. But also the obviously developments in the physics side and the whole kind of, well, I think it was the whole Witten movement, you might say. There are many others, but he's the absolute worst.
12 years after Donaldson made his first great discoveries about four-dimensional spaces, bright new light was shed on these subjects by two physicists, Natty Seiberg and Edward Witten, working at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton. Seiberg and Witten were developing theories of quarks and gluons, the fundamental particles inside nuclear particles. And they were using supersymmetry, a proposed fundamental symmetry of nature. Sibonia Witten's insights into four-dimensional space astounded mathematicians. They regarded the Seiberg-Witten discovery as a wonderful Christmas present from physicists. What does Donaldson remember about that time?
It would have been quite possible that mathematicians would have come across the Seiberg-Witten equations and seen that they also gave information about mm-hmm. formula fields. That could easily have happened perhaps a few years on. But what is a big surprise is that Seiberg and Witten wrote down a formula relating these Seiberg-Witten solutions mm-hmm. to the instanton solutions, mm-hmm. which, as you say, they were led to this formula by physics quantum field theory arguments, mm-hmm. which are not can't be made directly of rigorous mathematics. But the formula is there's overwhelming evidence that it's true, and some mathematicians are still struggling to understand
why it's true.
Why it's true. There are some mathematical proofs of slightly under slightly restricted conditions that are mathematical proofs, but they don't really give insight into why it's true. I think there are various versions of the formula. In some versions, one gets certain classical functions or modular forms appearing as generating functions for these things, and that's really completely mysterious mathematically why these things should appear. One can find ingenious proofs to say that that's what the formula must be, but there's many years ahead of work for mathematicians to sort of catch up, in a sense, and try to understand. But that, it would be important, not just for understanding this particular formula, but also for, presumably, that would lead to insights into the mathematical foundations of quantum field theory, to be able to...
So feeding back into physics, so to speak. If I may just jump ahead, we're sitting here at the Simon Centre for Geometry and Physics. I think it's fair to say that the fact that you're sitting here demonstrates that you quite like working alongside physicists, with mathematicians there as well.
Oh, yes.
This is an environment that's now congenial to you. I don't want to put words into your mouth, but I would imagine you would still describe yourself as a mathematician.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yet you're in a position where you want to have physicists on hand to talk with as well as mathematicians. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, Nikita Nekrasov is just next door. Although he's a physicist out of Vishnu, there's a lot of overlap between, in fact, one of the things he's famous for is some work on this Seiberg-Witten and instanton theory. So, yeah, it is an exciting opportunity, these interactions. The problem is that one gets so short of time. I would like to have more time to go to the physics activities.
Donaldson strikes me as typical of first-class mathematicians. Cautiously spoken, careful not to hype advances, content to take the long view and expect major advances to occur on a timescale of decades or even centuries. And that's in sharp contrast to physicists, who seem to me much less patient, readily jumping on bandwagons and often seeming to expect new advances to arrive in a steady stream, almost as if nature were obliged to keep its investigators busy. Does Donaldson agree that there are deep cultural differences between the physicists and mathematicians?
Yeah, there is a big... It's really a language problem, I would say. It's not... I mean, obviously, mathematicians are involved with proving things. Physicists are not directly concerned about proving things. Mm. But that's not really the main problem. We kind of accept that. It's more of a way of expressing things. Mm. It's different. For example, I went to talked by a physicist a while ago. That was very interesting, but they were using this word about these manifolds were wrapped on some cycles. Unless it's wrapped, it's not a manifold.
What do you mean by that?
The whole frustration was what was... Yeah. If you could just say what you meant by wrapped, then that would have become much clearer. So it's probably some very familiar mathematical notion. I could just say in mathematical language what this was, but there was a physicist's way of saying it. There are interpreters, people like Witten, of course, and Dave Morrison, people who can speak both. But I think that's the younger generation. There are many more people in the younger generation who can kind of talk both.
That's interesting. You really do believe that the aim that was nurtured in the 90s of actually bringing up a generation that was ideally equally comfortable in pure mathematics and physics, that's starting to come through, you think, now?
I think so. Right. Maybe not. I mean, maybe there are not many who are equally, but there are many who,
And you do and think...
Finish much better.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And one last thing, you'll know, there was this controversy way back from when Jaffe and Quinn were critical of the way the mathematicians were almost soiling their purity by collaborating with physicists who were not sufficiently rigorous in their approach. Do you think that concern has gone away now?
It hasn't gone away. It is it's a valid point. It's not the thing of primary interest to me, because I think the primary thing is to understand, for example, in this Seibig and Wedden stuff, maybe they're talking about integrating over infinite-dimensional space, which maybe is not actually mathematically defined, but at least I can say that's the concept. But that will be just one. There'll be many other concepts. I think, what does this mean? How can I translate that into something that I could understand, even imagining that the infinite-dimensional spaces were finite-dimensional. Mm-hmm. So that's really the main thing to me. But for the question of rigour, as you say, it is, if handled carefully, it's not a big thing, but it could be very bad for mathematics if the kind of a culture grew up of unproved results. So
correct me if I'm wrong, but I get the impression you think that on balance it's been a bonus for pure mathematics, this connection.
Oh, very much.
Yeah.
And many of the non-rigorous predictions have ultimately been proved by indirect methods.
Donaldson is one of the towering figures in the overlapping territory between mathematics and physics. Together with a few dozen other top-flight mathematicians, he's helping to shed light on the theories that physicists are developing to describe nature at the deepest level. One of the joys of working on my book, The Universe Speaks in Numbers, has been to see mathematicians working so productively with theoretical physicists, often approaching the same project from different directions. It's important to remember that this phenomenon isn't new. For centuries, scholars trying to understand the concrete natural world have worked closely with thinkers about the abstract world of mathematics. The two worlds are closely linked, and perhaps eventually will become one.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.